This is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And if you wonder why animals do some of the amazing things they do, you have to give us a call right now. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Among the calls this hour, we'll be exploring another special topic. And what is it this time, Patricia?
Today we'll talk about echolocation, which is an animal's ability to bounce sounds off of objects to identify them. It helps animals who have poor eyesight, you know, bats, dolphins in murky water. It helps them to localize and identify objects in the environment. And there's some new research that suggests that humans, believe it or not, have this capability too. So a little later on in the show, we're going to talk about why this might be an important discovery.
You know, I have glasses that I have to wear, and I wonder if I use echolocation to locate things.
You bounce your eyes off of things. I'm trying to match your eyes and sound.
I can't see, so I'm used.
Oh, you're in a murky environment. I got it. Larry lives in a murky environment. Yeah, I increasingly do too as I get older. So maybe we could use this echolocation, Larry.
We'll give it a try, and we'll also welcome a guest to share her story about a horse named Lay Me Down and what it truly means to be chosen by a horse. All that later. Right now, we'll take your calls at 1-800-462-7413, and here's our first caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, Larry and Trisha. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, who are we speaking with?
My name's Dawn, and I'm from Arcata, California.
Dawn, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
My daughter and I have a wonderful puppy. I guess she's a year and a half now. Her name is Pippi, and she's an Australian Shepherd Bernese Mountain Dog mix. This summer, though, we've spent a lot of time on a remote stretch of river here in Northern California, and there's this great large swimming hole, and Maddie and I would swim in it and play on the raft, and Pippi would come out and swim with us and try to shepherd us to shore, and it was all very lovely. but then Pippi discovered fish, and things have gone downhill ever since. Now she's totally obsessed with fishing, and she'll stand in the shallows up to her knees and look down for fish and for hours, and if she sees one, she'll pounce on it and put her head all the way underwater and snorkel around and sometimes come up with algae or rocks and spit them out and start all over again. She's pretty unresponsive. No, she is unresponsive to us. She won't answer to our call, and sometimes she goes on these little fishing trips. Obviously, I'm worried about the local animals, and I don't want her to damage the populations.
Pippi and I have a lot in common, you
do
know that?
You
yeah,
like
I wander down the stream fishing, too. I love to fish.
And he's quite unresponsive, I understand.
You have to go and pull on your leash to bring you back, yeah?
So we worry both about Larry and Pippi running into a bear who's also fishing at the wrong time of the year here.
We tried two things, and just like your idea, if those... and. See if those things
work. Oh, yeah, great. Tell us what you've tried.
Well, salami is the main thing we've tried.
Good old salami. The salami solution.
I know. Well, so I brought salami out, and I've called her name, and if she even, like, perks an ear, I would give her a piece of salami, and I got her to the point where she'd look up at me if I called her name.
Okay.
And I'd give her this piece of salami, but then salami kind of lost its charm for her.
Got sick of salami.
Well, you know, what I'd do is I'd fight fire with fire. I would, rather than taking along salami, I would take along fish. I would get some kind of great fish, and I would use that. And I wouldn't hesitate for a while to have her on a line. Mm-hmm. You know, have her on a long line so you have some control over this situation. And what I would basically ask her to do is to start responding to you before she gets lost in this fugue of fish. You know, so you get out of the car or you're walking towards the water, and long before you get there, I want you to call her name and run the other way a couple of steps to get her sort of extra excited, and then give her a piece of fish. And then walk 10 more steps towards the water, and then call her name and run the other way. That's part of the reinforcement. And then give her a piece of fish. So you started getting her responding to you when it's not so hard for her to.
Okay.
And then gradually work your way up to asking her to respond to you when she's actually fishing. But I would also control her behavior in that, have a line on her and only give her access to fish when she's worked for it.
I don't think she's actually ever caught a fish. But I'm not sure that she gets that reinforcement, because they're just little tiny fish that she's never come up with.
You know what I do that? I just had a thought. Go to a bait store.
Uh-huh.
And buy little tiny minnows or something. Buy little real fish.
That's what I thought you were going to say to begin with.
Oh, I was just thinking of going to the supermarket and buying, you know, like hunks of fish. You
oh,
know?
I was thinking the whole fish.
Larry's a fisherman, right? So Larry is like, yeah, go buy little fish. And he's like, if I look up, I actually get the fish, she's going to be like blown away.
Hey, that's a great idea.
There you go.
Oh, thanks so much, you guys.
Thanks a lot for calling. And remember, don't take live fish. Because we don't want to be spreading fish that are not a species native to a particular water. So get fish that have passed away.
Good, very, very important biological point. Don't be putting species in the stream that shouldn't be there.
Tricia, we heard from Janice in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who simply wants to know this. If dogs evolved from wolves, how do we get all the different breeds of dogs?
Oh, it's a great question. And one of the sort of the question behind this question is how can you get so much range? You know, how can you get a 3-pound teacup chihuahua and a 230-pound, you know, mastiff? I mean, it is sort of shocking. And what we understand, there are genes called regulator genes. And regulator genes sort of do what it sounds like. They regulate other genes. Sort of sit like command center, you know. and one of the things they regulate is development. And if you want to have a highly varied expression of size or shape, the way to do it is during development. And so what it looks as though is there's been particular selection for a particular regulator gene that allows us to have incredible flexibility, or dogs to have incredible flexibility in actually how they develop. And it changes their process of development. It sort of things kick in at different times.
Mm.
And so that's most likely what it is. It's this very interesting regulator gene that has been selected for. You see a lot of variation in domesticated animals, and that's probably why.
You know, if somebody else has an intriguing question for us, how do they get that to us?
We love intriguing questions, and we love it if you send us your questions or your ideas. Just send it to pets@wpr.org. What could be easier than that, hey?
Well, could also be picking up the phone and calling 1-800-462-7413. We're happy to answer your questions on the air as well. As a matter of fact, we have another caller online. Hello, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Sue in Washington.
Washington, D.C., I'll bet.
Washington, D.C., you're right.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Sue. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a wonderful, sweet 12-year-old cat. I've had her about 8 years, and she loves to travel with me. I have a special carrier that I use in the car every weekend to go to the country. But she has this pattern. It's become a ritual where she always goes into under the bed, in the middle under the bed, and makes me dig her out from under the bed. And she's very happy when she's in the carrier. And, in fact, over the weekend she often sleeps in it when I leave it open. But I can't get her to break this I guess, cat-and-mouse game or something we play. But I'm just getting a little too old and crawling around on the floor for, sometimes 5-10 minutes to get her to move near where I can get her. And I need some advice on how you can get a cat out from under the bed when you want to go somewhere.
So what do you think the trigger is? Because you said that she sleeps in the crate sometimes. Yeah. What starts her?
Well, she, sometimes I try these elaborate psychological tricks. I try not to let her know that this is an afternoon I'm going to pack her up and go. So I try to behave exactly as I always do, watch television, read the paper, get on the phone, and let her crawl into my lap, and then I can just gently carry her to the carrier.
Right.
But she can pick up the darndest change, littlest change in my behavior, and she's under the bed. What is this? She just doesn't like this ritual of being put into this carrier, and she'll mew at that a little bit, but ultimately she doesn't complain.
Well, you know, a lot of cats don't seem to like the entry into their carriers. It's absolutely true. So there are a couple things you might do. One is I would spend some time trying to figure out what the trigger is. You know, if it is exactly the same day of every week, animals do seem to have a pretty good biological sense about them. So that, just that it's Wednesday, might be enough. You know, three dark times after the weekend when you're home all weekend, you know, that's always a possibility. It's also possible that you're packing. Is a trigger. Certainly that's a classic trigger and a really obvious one. And so one way around that, and this has actually helped several people whose cats had separation anxiety, is just leave the suitcase out and put it somewhere where it's not too much in your way and put things in and out of it. And so basically it no longer becomes a trigger for you being about to go. That's helped some individuals. The fact that your cat sleeps in the carrier is particularly interesting to me and suggests to me that it's possible that maybe she's not quite as fond of traveling as you might think she is. Mm. One thing I would consider doing is getting Feel Away, that pheromone that can act to soothe some cats. So that's something you might want to consider. Spray the base of her carrier, and so when she's actually in it traveling around, she might be less uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to be a happy camper, and so will your cat.
The traveling cat.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Coming up next, find out what we can learn from a human's ability to use echolocation. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and you're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers you the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and find out when Patricia will be in a city near you. Information online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are also available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and it's time now to take a look at this week's topic. And Tricia, you have some news to share about echolocation.
That's right. You know, we've talked before about how echolocation is used by many species, dolphins, bats, for example, to locate, identify objects. But up till now, this is one of the skills that we believe that humans did not have, right?
And now there's evidence that humans can use echolocation?
There is, besides sonar, you know. In the Navy, there's a study by Carolyn DeLong and her colleagues. And what they did in the study is they presented tape recordings of echoes to both species, to dolphins and to humans. These were echoes that were caused, you know, as we know, by sounds bounced off of different kinds of objects.
Sure.
And the question was whether individuals of either species could differentiate between the objects based on the echoes that bounced off of them.
Interesting. What did they find?
It turned out, believe it or not, that the people were equally good as the dolphins. They were able to discriminate between these different objects based on the sounds that bounced off of them. And in some cases, they were even better than the dolphins.
Why did they want to find out if humans have this ability anyway, to be perfectly honest?
What are your tax dollars doing? Well, I don't know if it was your tax dollars or not, but it's a good question. But as it turns out, the purpose of the study was not actually to see just whether people could use echoes to identify objects. The question was whether they could use people to help us understand what dolphins are actually doing when they use echolocation. They speculated that if people and dolphins responded in similar kinds of ways to echoes, then they could use people to experiment to try and figure out what acoustic features of echoes were important to dolphins when they're identifying different things. It's sort of a Dr. Doolittle kind of question.
And it sounds like a great way for scientists to understand what and maybe how other animals are communicating.
Exactly.
And if you'd like to communicate with us, by the way, here's how. Give us a call.
Very smooth, Mueller.
Give us a call, 1-800-462-7413, and let's take a call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi there. My name's Miranda from Fort Myers, Florida.
Thank you very much for calling, and what can we do for you?
Well, I have a question about my cat, because he's developed a sort of peculiar habit. When we let him outside, he likes to roll in anthills.
You know, there's actually, I'm laughing, but there really is a good explanation for that.
I would love to hear it.
And so would I. I am speculating, but I'm pretty confident about this hypothesis. Those of us who, when we were little kids, used to play with ants and sit outside in the desert and watch ants working in their little hills, one of the things you learned is that if you found a dead ant or you squished an ant, there was a particular smell, and that's the smell of formic acid. It's a very strong smell. Where humans are very good at smelling it. Formic acid turns out to be a repellent. It's an insect repellent. So it's very, there are a couple of things that could be going on. One, it's kind of a way of protecting himself from fleas. It's a kind of a anti-pest device, a naturalistic pest repellent. That's one possibility. And the other is, well, I guess there are a couple of other possibilities. One other possibility is that the cat's using it as a kind of a sort of a territorial marker, you know. Mm-hmm. It smells like me. I smell like it. This is my territory. Cats usually don't roll like that, like dogs do. We don't know why dogs actually like to roll in stinky things, but for whatever reason they do, maybe your cat's doing the same thing. And of course, there's always a third possibility, which is that it smells good to your cat and he likes it. It makes him happy. But I'll bet it's the formic acid.
Oh, and that's really interesting. We were just really curious. We thought maybe he enjoyed it when we scratched the bites, because he ends up with big ant bites all over his neck.
No kidding.
Whoa.
Well, try scratching him before he actually rolls and see if he'll stop doing it.
We can't get him to stop, and I don't know. It's funny. I've seen him do it dozens of times. So
dozens
that's
of
really
times.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He's a masochist. He likes
he likes the bites, maybe.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
No, it really is hard to imagine.
Yeah, I think it's the smell. Cats are so driven by smell. I think it's the scent of formic acid, but that's just my hypothesis.
You know, you mentioned dogs rolling around, and we heard from listeners named Ken and Lynn, whose dog like to roll around outside, much like Miranda's cat does. And here's what they wrote. We used to live on the edge of a development, and our miniature poodle liked to roll and scat from raccoons and skunks. And we were forced to bathe the dog immediately after being outside, since he's a house dog. However, we found we could train him to roll on scratch and sniff perfume ads from magazines.
I love it.
Soon after, he stopped looking to roll around in the out of doors. And by the way, this gave a whole new meaning to the words French poodle. Since learning to roll around on scratch and sniff perfume ads, our poodle is more selective about what he'll roll around in, and if the perfume is smelly enough, it's fun to watch him scoot across the floor on one shoulder, sliding on the scratch and sniff tear out.
This is absolutely wonderful. This is cracking me up. You know, most dogs don't like the smell of perfume. At least they act as though they don't. They look as though they're disgusted. They'll turn their heads away. They look disgusted. It's like, ugh, how could you possibly do that? Why don't you go roll in a good cow pie or something? You know, what's wrong with you humans anyway? But this is a French poodle, they say. So
yeah.
Perhaps that's it. But this is really interesting. I think some other people should try this. And
maybe
out there
Miranda can try to get her cat to roll around in that.
Maybe.
Instead of the anthill.
I'm curious about how they first initiated getting their poodle to roll around on a scratch and sniff. This is certainly going to increase sales in those women's magazines. You know, Oprah is going to sell more magazines.
You do wonder how they managed to do that.
To get that started.
Maybe they'll email us back. How could they do that, by the way?
The easiest thing to do, to email us, you can just send us an email to pets@wpr.org. That'd be easier than actually teaching your dog to roll in a scratch and sniff.
A whole lot easier.
Perfume sample.
And here's the number to call if you want to talk to us right now, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, my name is George. I'm calling from Eureka, California.
George, thanks a lot for calling. What can we do for you?
I have a 2-year-old Springer Spaniel named Duchess. She's a handful, but we love her. She screams in the car.
Oh, no.
She gets really excited when we get in the car. I think she thinks we're going to go play ball. She's ball crazy.
Okay.
And she just screams her head off, and there's nothing I can do to keep her quiet. I mean, we love taking her places, but it's like a symphony of screams, and we don't know what to do. Help.
And you don't enjoy driving with a spaniel shrieking in your ear?
I enjoy her, and I love her. It's just too loud.
Gotcha.
She has a chucket and balls, and I keep them in the car. And I don't know if that's a cue for her to think that she's ready to go play, or I don't know. We're just trying to figure something out with her.
Does she do it every time she's in the car?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so the car's become the cue. The car's become the cue. There are a couple things that you might want to try. One is actually relates to how she's traveling in the car. Is she in a crate or confined in any way?
No, she's tied down with sort of a pet seat belt.
Okay,
good
for you.
Would a crate help? Or?
Sometimes.
She's crate trained, okay. So she knows about the box.
I don't want you to think it's a magic cure, so I don't want you to go out and get a crate and crate train her. She's never been in there. But sometimes dogs, if they can move around, it just keeps them hyped up and sort of feeds into their own arousal level. But if she's attached, you know, if she's attached to a seatbelt with a harness on, she can't really do that. So I don't know if...
Maybe it's a seatbelt.
I don't know.
I mean, she's able to stand up and move a little bit. I don't know if that's part of it.
Crate might help a little bit. The advantage of the crate is that you can cover it. There's just less stimulation. Try the crate. Put her in the crate. Give her a stuffed Kong and don't go anywhere. You know, just have the doors open. Make sure she's cool enough. And just let her hang out in there and chew on her toy or not. And if she screams, just ignore it. And because
we've learned how to do that.
That. One of the things that she's learned is that every time I get in the car, I get to go play ball, and I'm so excited I can barely stand it. So if she learns, you know, every time you get in the car, you don't actually go get to play ball, you might sort of damp that arousal level down. If that doesn't work, I would get a trainer to come out and help you learn how to interrupt the screaming and then redirect her to something else. But that usually takes another person in the car with you, and it takes some really good timing. So that's another possibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, my wife's always with me, so, I mean, we'll
there
go.
You go. Yeah, there are two of you then. Try plan A, and if it doesn't work, call us back, and we'll go to plan B.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. 1-800-462-7413, our number to call. Let's see who's next. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
This is Greg from Nacogdoches, Texas.
Well, Greg, it's a real pleasure to speak with you. Thanks very much for calling. And what can we do for you?
Well, my dog, his name is Mufasa, and he's about 100 pounds, and he's kind of big. And what it is every morning, or just about every morning or every evening when I come home from work, he likes to greet me. And what he does is usually he'll jump up on me, and that's really the only time, and I don't mind. I kind of encourage it because he only does it to me. And what the funny thing is, though, is he immediately grabs my arm with his mouth, and he kind of, I mean, not hard, but really firm, and then he gnaws on it, and it'll be either the right or left, and then after a little bit, he'll switch arms real quick. And, of course, I'm petting him. And it's funny, and, I mean, he's doing it almost at the point where it hurts, but he's not, but it's real firm.
Oh.
And he only does that to me and my grandson.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very smart dog, and like I said, I let him jump up on me because if I'm in good clothes, somehow,
he knows, really.
And I was just curious about that gnawing thing because, like I said, I've had a lot of dogs in my life, but I've never had another dog do that.
You know, it's a really good question, and I don't have a great answer for you. What I can tell you is that there are, I know a lot of dogs who do that. You know, maybe, I don't know, 7% or something of the dogs I know that when they're greeting their owners, they like to mouth their arm. I would use this as an opportunity to teach him more about using his mouth with finesse. So anytime it hurts the slightest, you know, if you feel some real pressure, I would go, ow! Just yelp like a seal.
Okay.
You know? And let him know, ow, that hurt a little bit. So you can help him learn more and more and more about using his mouth pressure with real finesse.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Give that a try. And thanks a lot for calling, Greg. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Coming up next, we'll learn how a broken horse fixed a broken heart. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers a variety of information, including online archives of the show, pet tips, Patricia's dog training books, and the opportunity to submit email questions. The website is callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this week we welcome Susan Richards to the program. Susan is the author of Chosen by a Horse, How a Broken Horse Fixed a Broken Heart. It's now out in paperback, and she joins us today to talk about it. Welcome to the program, Susan. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You say that you were chosen by this horse named Lay Me Down. What do you mean by that?
When I went to the SPCA to adopt or to foster one of these abused horses, you got to pick who you wanted off of a police roster, just a list of names. So I had picked a horse named Current Squeeze. Because I thought it was a cute name. So then I went out in the paddock, and the trailer was parked at the gate, and Current Squeeze was, they tried to separate her from the herd of 20 mares, and they couldn't. They couldn't get her or anybody else to get into the trailer. Finally, after, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes, a horse ran into the trailer on her own, and it wasn't Current Squeeze. It was a horse called Lay Me Down.
Lay Me Down, that's a funny name. How did you feel about that name initially?
I really thought it was a terrible name. I was really sorry that I had to have a horse named Lay Me Down. So, but that's who I got.
What was it that made you feel you could relate so well to Lay Me Down?
Well, having been around horses all my life, I had always experienced horses, if I'm honest about it, in sort of a one-way in terms of expressing affection. I had never felt loved by any of my horses. I mean, they liked me. They knew me. I always loved them much more than they loved me, I think. I think most horse people would say that. Lay Me Down was the first horse I ever owned that loved me, that really expressed affection in an unusual way for a horse. And that was a profound experience.
What did she do? I'm really curious. Tell me what she did behaviorally that made you feel that she loved you so much more than other horses have. I'm so curious.
So many little things. It's not going to sound like much, but I think anyone who owns or is around horses a lot will recognize the signs are so subtle with horses. She had this very low nicker when I would approach the pasture. I could hear her. She would do this sort of this almost ecstatic little sound when she would see me. That was one. And then whenever I got close enough to her, she would spray me with this sigh of this misty sigh. She would sniff me all over. And I mean, it felt like a horse hug. You know, she had no arms, but sort of the equivalent.
And I just feel hugged hearing it all.
Yeah.
I really do. And I know that nicker that you're talking about, that real low nicker they usually give to their foals, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a very sweet sound. And I never got it much from anybody except for Lay Me Down.
Your book is titled How a Broken Horse Fixed a Broken Heart. Can you expand on that for us?
When I was five, I lost my family. My mother died and my father disappeared and my brother was sent away. And sort of overnight, I lost my nuclear family. And for the rest of my childhood, I was taken in by my father's mother. But I didn't really live with her. She sort of farmed me out to a series of different relatives. And that was my childhood. If you had asked me about my childhood, I would have said, and I did say this all my life, I would have said, well, I was really lucky. You know, I went to a good school and I went to camp and I had horses and, you know, I had a lot of advantages. And that's what I would say. And it wasn't until I was 45 years old and Lay Me Down was really sick and it was my birthday, and it was Christmas, around Christmas, that I had this experience that showed me how sad and angry I was deep inside. I didn't know that. And it was just, it was one of those very important moments in my life when I understood something about myself for the first time, which was that I had all of this unexpressed grief about what happened to me at age 5. I had never felt that before. And it sort of happened in over a period of a few seconds on my way to work one morning. And it was because of this horse and her really critical illness, and I was taking her to a hospital the next day, that I think this, it kind of jarred this recognition about who I was. I think it was associated with going to a hospital. And the last time I saw my mother alive was on Christmas in a hospital. And that was a very important piece of information to have about myself.
What did you learn from Lay Me Down based on the way she seemed to cope with her troubled past? And indeed, she had a troubled past.
Oh, she was just open and easy, and I saw no signs of neurotic behavior as a result of being abused the way she was. And it wasn't just briefly abused. She was probably abused most of her life. She was 19 when I got her. There was just sort of, she was willing to start all over from scratch with someone new as if she had never suffered at the hands of humans, and I thought that was pretty remarkable.
What was the abuse, do you think?
Well, it was physical abuse. They were, you know, they were hit. There was terrible racing injuries that had never been treated by a vet. She had, the last year or so, they just simply had stopped feeding them. So they were emaciated. She had pneumonia. She had terrible injuries from racing, cuts and sores and all that sort of thing.
Tell us a little bit about your other horses. Did they all accept Lay Me Down when you brought her home?
Two of them did. I had two geldings and a mare, two boys and a girl. Mares frequently don't like other mares, so that's not unusual. But what was unusual was the extent of my mare's hostility toward this new mare. And for a long time, I kept them separated because I anticipated that. And then finally, it was no longer humane to keep Lay Me Down separate from my little herd of three. So it took a long time in introducing them to each other, hoping that that would prevent the scene that actually did happen, which was this terrible fight instigated by my Morgan mare, and in which she really injured Lay Me Down. So it was, and after that there was a sort of truce, but never affection between the two of them.
What happened to Lay Me Down?
Ultimately, she died of a brain tumor, which is what I was just beginning to deal with when I was taking her to Cornell the next day after this incident. And I was taking her as sort of one last-ditch effort to see if they could save her. Maybe the tumor could be removed or reduced. And I was just beginning that very brief journey of, you know, seeing if there was one last thing we could do.
And obviously, eventually, you did lose her. How did the other horses react when she passed away?
Well, you know, I led them over one by one to her dead body when I euthanized her and before we buried her, just so they would know. And Georgia was, my mare was indifferent. One of the other geldings sort of seemed mildly interested. But Hotshot, which is who she bonded with the most in my of my horses, was, I mean, his grief was really something to behold. I had never seen such a thing. I'd never had to euthanize a horse until Lay Me Down, so I didn't know about this aspect of horses. His grief was really a terrible, sort of wonderful thing to witness and be near.
We're talking about some kind of sad things here, but there were really a lot of positives to your life with Lay Me Down.
Yeah, she forced me to face this sad, angry part of myself to recognize that, A, it existed, and then the second part was what was I going to do about it? Is this who I wanted to be? This kind of, you know, I lived a kind of isolated life on a farm. I'm a single woman, and I thought that was just a fine way to cope. And she made me understand that, you know, being lonely and isolated is not the answer to having been deeply hurt at one time, that it's really important to continue to take risks. So the first thing I did as a result of Lay Me Down was I started dating again after maybe 10 years of not doing that, thinking I was really done with men and relationships. And I know many women or many people come to that conclusion for a lot of reasons, and that was mine. And I was just done. And she made me understand that I wasn't done, that you're never done, you know, that you have to continue to try and take risks in life, including, you know, relationship risks.
So it seems as though a horse named Lay Me Down could have been named Get Me Up.
Or Pick Me Up. Pick Me Up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And, you know, another thing I think I remember from your book, you mentioned that you had always wanted to write a book, if I'm not mistaken, and here Lay Me Down gave you that inspiration.
Yeah, she did. I had written actually three books before I got Lay Me Down, novels, and I hadn't been able to sell them. And it had been a long time, many years of rejections. And I thought, well, I want to write this story about Lay Me Down. And my first thought was, who would ever read this? You know, who cares about a horse and who cares about me? And I'll write it anyway just for myself. So I wrote this memoir kind of to honor her. And it was just something I needed. It was a story I wanted to tell. And I really just thought it would never go anywhere outside of my own desk. It was for me. So no one was more surprised than I was when my agent said, you know, this is pretty good. I think we should try to sell it. And we did.
Of the lessons you learned from Lay Me Down, which of them still has the strongest impact on your life today?
I suppose if she had said it in English, she would have said to me, Susan, open your heart. And that's what she said, and that's what I heard, and that's what I tried to do.
That's a pretty big lesson.
That's a big lesson.
Yeah.
And I thank you very much for being with us today, Susan. It was a real treat.
Thank you for having me.
Susan Richards is the author of Chosen by a Horse, How a Broken Horse Fixed a Broken Heart. She joined us from the studios of WAMC in Albany, New York. Stay tuned. Our animal trivia question of the week is next with your chance to win a copy of Susan's book. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you missed an episode of Calling All Pets, the show is available online. Our website offers archives of the show, along with the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and learn more about a guest you heard on the program. More information available online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org.
You're listening to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And before we go back to the phones, it's time for our animal trivia question of the week. And if you think you know the answer to this week's question, please give us a call. Here's the number. It's 1-800-462-7413. All correct guessers will have their names pulled together, and two winners will be selected at random to win a copy of Chosen by a Horse by Susan Richards. And here's today's question. In her book, Susan writes about how she'd always been fond of Morgan horses. Morgans are a refined and compact breed of horse that have strong limbs, laid-back shoulders, a well-arched neck, and while thoroughbreds and American saddlebreds stand at about 15.2 hands high, Morgans can be as short as 14.1 hands high. Approximately how tall is 14.1 hands in feet?
It sounds like one of those, you know, who's on first? How many
hands
and feet?
If you think you know the answer, give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. And to find out the correct answer, check out our website in about a week, and we'll have it posted online at callingallpets.org. And now it's time to take another call at 1-800-462-7413, and let's see who's next. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
This is Damien out of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Damien, thanks a lot for calling. What's up with you today?
Not a whole lot today, thankfully, but I'm calling about my dog. He's a kind of a shorter terrier mix, but sometimes he's not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Got it.
We love him dearly, of course, but he has this nasty habit of running out back in the middle of the night in our nice fenced-in backyard and chasing anything that's there. Unfortunately, about once every 6 weeks or so, whatever's there is a skunk, and he promptly gets sprayed.
Oh, dear.
I would like to know how to either get him to stop chasing the skunks or how to get the skunks to stay out of my yard.
Yeah, gotcha. Mm. So is he loose in the yard at night? Let's start with your terrier mix here.
Only for short times. It's all nice and fenced in. We let him out to go to the, you know, go to the bathroom, and then we let him back
in. Okay. So does this happen when he sort of has his last time to go outside and go potty before you guys go to bed? Is that when that happens?
Yeah, usually. Or sometimes we'll wake up in the middle of the night for whatever reason, and we'll let him out.
That one I would try deleting from your repertoire. See, if he's healthy and he's a grown-up, he should be able to make it through the night. And so you're going to train yourselves to not open the door, even though he's dancing around just so engagingly.
And what about your fence? It must be a kind of an open fence if a skunk can get in.
It's got a couple of small gaps, just barely big enough for a skunk.
That might be another thing. Sometimes these solutions to behavioral problems are the simplest logistical kinds of solutions, because you can do a certain amount of training, but sometimes the much quicker, easier way. And I'm all about the easier way if you can do it. So I would definitely get your handyman hat on and block those.
The lower part of the fence.
The lower part of the fence to keep the squirrels out, maybe keep rabbits out as well. I mean, keep the skunks out, keep rabbits out as well. That's another thing to do. However, you're going to have that time. You need to let him outside late at night before you go to bed. Maybe something's in there even though you blocked all the holes. So let's say it still happens. One of the things you might want to think about doing, if it's still happening often, is just that last time out, take him out on a long line. Just go out with him on a long line. And the training part is I would teach him to go to the bathroom on cue. I don't know about you, but when I take my dogs out last, I'm like not wanting to go on a walk, thank you. I'm wanting to like get in and get out and get in and get to bed. So I trained all my dogs to go to the bathroom when I either say go pee or I say hurry up, which is the other, and that's usually how I'm feeling, which is like hurry up. So I go outside, I say go pee, and if everybody, as soon as they pee, they get a little tiny piece of a cookie. I mean a dog biscuit, not my cookie.
Yeah, I
could give myself a cookie too, I suppose. I'll think about that tonight. But the idea is to get them to basically walk outside, and rather than doing this last cruise around reading the newspaper of the grass, is just to lift their little legs and get their job done and come back inside with you. So you might want to think about doing that too.
So lots of things to think about there. Thanks a lot, Damien, for calling. Appreciate your call. And if you'd like to join us, the number to call 1-800-462-7413. Patricia, we heard from a Florida listener named Joanna, who's about to have her hands plenty full.
Yeah.
She writes this: I'm expecting triplets in about 2 months.
Whoa.
And I've never had children before.
Oh, whoa.
How do I
can't help you, honey.
Well, you might. How do I prepare my 7-year-old Belgian Tavurin, Bonnie, and my 4-year-old Skipper Key Darby for this major change?
Well, here's
what she says, too. They typically get lots of attention from me, especially at the moment as the doctors have put me on modified bed rest. So, she's there. Thanks very much for your advice.
Great that you're thinking about this now. I'm glad we've got
a couple months to go.
Yeah, a couple months to work on this. One of the first things I do is I would teach my dogs to be very comfortable being put in a crate or put in another room and have the door shut while you go off to do other things. Because there's just times, I don't care how much you love your dogs. I mean, I don't have children, but there are times I need to put my dogs in the study and shut the door and just concentrate on something else. So I'd start doing that now. And basically, this is where, get out that hollow toy I'm always talking about. Get out that hollow toy, a Kong or something like that. What works best is to put some food inside there and then put it in the freezer. So I mix up a mixture of kibble and canned dog food, and I just mix it up sort of as a little chili-like mix, and then I stuff it inside the Kong, and I put it in the freezer. And the reason you put it in the freezer is that if it's not frozen, it takes the dog 3.5 minutes to lick it out. If it's frozen, it takes 10 times as long to get out. So what I want you to start doing is put the dog in the crate or the back room where you're going to have it just away while you can take care of your triplets for a while, and put them in there, put down this wonderful Kong. Make sure the two dogs aren't going to fight over food, so separate them if you need to, if that's going to happen. Put it down, And then you're going to leave the room, and hopefully they're going to be like, I can't believe there's this great food in here. They're going to be busy eating it. But here's the trick. I want you to come back before they're done. I want you to come back in 30 seconds. And as long as they're not aggressive over food or objects, I want you to just put your hand down, take them away, and say, oh, I'm sorry, too bad. Because of what I want you to use is reverse psychology. I want your dogs to be like, no, no, don't come back. I'm not done yet. So the next time you let them lick on them for 5 minutes, and then eventually you get them used to spending half an hour or whatever away in this other room. So that's one thing to do. There are also some books out there. Brian Kilcommons, K-I-L-C-O-M-M-O-N-S. He has a nice book on preparing your dogs for babies coming. So that's another thing you might want to do is get some books out there. Might want to think about getting some tapes of babies crying because dogs aren't used to that often. It can be a little distressing to them. So that's a whole bunch of ideas. You can be a busy woman for 2 months, but nothing like what you're going to be very soon after that.
Daughter Emily is 4 years old, but I still remember the infant years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a lot of work just for one, alone three.
The baby tunnel. Well, maybe it's, how cheaper by the dozen, Less work per child when you have a litter. Well, good luck. Let us know how things are going.
Yeah, please do, Joanna. We would appreciate hearing from you. And we'd appreciate hearing from you, too. Here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
This is Peggy Smith.
Peggy Smith from where?
From Alexandria, Virginia.
Teggy's a great name. What's the origin of that name?
It's an old Welsh name. It's short for Tegwin, T-E-G-W-I-N.
Very, very cool name.
Thanks.
But I bet you didn't call us to talk about your name.
No, my dog has an unusual name, too. It's Bogey, and that's the golfing score, Bogey.
Yeah.
Not that I get that score very often, but that's the dog's name. He's an adorable black lab. And like all labs, he loves to eat. Well, this is the problem. We have a sub-zero refrigerator freezer. And if you know the type I'm talking about, the freezer part is on the bottom.
Yep.
And you pull it out. In fact, it's very hard to pull out. I take, two hands to pull it out.
But we can guess what your dog can do.
Oh, what?
Opens up the freezer.
Yeah, how does he do it? I'm sure it's with his paws. It couldn't be with his teeth. So he does it with his paws, and he does it at night while we're asleep. So I was listening to your program one time, and I heard about these little pads that you get, that have a little shock to them.
Scat mats.
I got some from the Old Town School for Dogs, and that didn't work. He just stepped right over it and still pulled the damn freezer out.
I see.
Yeah. And then next, Fred, my husband, put a little table in front of it. He moved the table, opened the freezer, and got, it's usually stuff in there. Well, you know what's in your freezer, bread and stuff like that. So the table didn't work, and the pad didn't work. And now Fred moves, it's kind of a sitting room in our kitchen, this huge wing chair. I mean, it's a big wing chair.
How handy to have to move that in front of the freezer every night.
Exactly. Not only is that a pain, but he figured he could do it until maybe he gets out of this habit. But the other day when I was gone during the day, he's usually out in the garden. He wasn't in the garden. He was in the house during the day, and he did it.
Here's my quick solution.
Okay.
Can you say crate? Crating your dog when you're gone is certainly one possibility. Now, I know that means your dog's not going to be loose in the house. But if it's just at night and it's a nice, cozy crate and you ease your dog into it, you never want to just put a dog in a crate, shut the door, and assume they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But go get a really big crate that's really comfy. And what you're going to do is you're going to play a little crate game. You're going to toss a piece of food in and he goes in and he gets it. He eats it off the floor of the crate and he comes right back out. That's all you do. You do that like 10 times in a row. But as you toss the food in, you say, crate up, and he goes in. But he comes right back out. You never try and keep him in it at first. You do that for a couple of days. And then on day three or four, then you're going to toss a little bit more food in, and you're going to shut the door for just a little second. 1/1000, 2/1000, maybe 3 seconds. Open it out. let him out again. And then gradually you're going to ask him to stay longer in there. But again, this is when you're going to use that hollow toy that you stuff with food.
Right.
Put in kibble and canned food, freeze it, so it takes him a long time to get it. So he really likes going in there.
Actually, the crate idea is going to make my husband unhappy and my daughter, Tiffany, very happy because she had suggested that before.
Ah.
And when he stays at her house, he gets into things like the trash, which really does annoy her.
Yeah, so that's a great solution. The one thing that I had thought of, now there are cables with a very strong glue attached that you can put on your computer to keep your computers from being stolen.
Right.
And you could glue it to the side of the freezer and on both sides, and you can put a little lock on it. And so you can just go to your computer store and find one long enough and glue it on both sides and
unlock your freezer every time you want to get in.
Well, it's a little, just at night when you go to bed, put that in.
But when they leave the day, too.
Oh, yeah.
See, I love that, Larry.
The day.
So that's another possibility.
There you go. Two good ideas for you. Let us
Thank
know what
you.
Happens, okay?
I will. Thank you so much, both of you. And I listened to your program. It's very clever.
Thank you, Taggy. Thank you very much for calling. And Patricia, thank you so much. We'll be back again next week, and we'll do this
my
all over.
My pleasure. No locks on my mouth here. Always happy to talk.
Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And she's here every week to give you practical advice about your pet's behavior. Calling All Pets is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Our producer is Cynthia Schuster. And Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0908P. More pet tips and advice for training new dogs or leaving pets home alone are available online at callingallpets.org. Our website also features a complete list of past guests and online archives of the program. The website, once again, is callingallpets.org.
On the next Calling All Pets, we'll find out what role sleep plays for different animal species and how we evolved to sleep in the first place.
And we'll also welcome a premier animal photographer whose book of photography helps us celebrate the new American mutt.
Tune in for that and more of your animal behavior questions on the next Calling All Pets.